Welcome back to DevelopLex. Today we have a fun edition. We have no guest. It's just me and Ross because we are doing our DevelopLex roundtable. We're not sitting at a roundtable currently. We're actually just sitting across from each other. It's just two of us. But we did this last year as well. And we, with as much as there is going on in the city and just in the real estate environment currently, instead of having a guest, we just kind of wanted to dissect a few of the things going on. And so we specifically wrote down a few topics that we get asked about a lot after hearing episodes, and people just want to hear more about it. So, especially as it pertains to Lexington, we're really going to try to stay focused in on some key issues today. So, and things that we feel passionate about, and so do our listeners. So these are not just our things to talk about. These are mostly things that people have asked for our opinions, or at least some light into these topics.
I know that these opinions are me and Weston's opinions. They don't reflect the sponsors. They don't reflect the companies that we get to work with, work for. And so, Weston, do you want to start out on urban service boundary, short-term rentals, interest rates, or affordable housing? Go.
Urban service boundary has to be the base one. We're recording. Typically, we try not to timestamp things, but we're releasing this soon. So we're recording pretty much right after some of the bigger decisions have been made, or at least some of the conversations that have been had just occurred within the last few weeks. And we've been to some of those meetings as well, and you know people that are a part of those meetings. So I say we jump into urban service boundary.
Let's roll.
This episode is brought to you by Bank of the Bluegrass. It's easy to preach about being a community bank without actually operating that way, but I can attest as a real customer of Bank of the Bluegrass that they are truly in the community and for the community. Whether it's closing a real estate transaction that needs some creativity, troubleshooting an issue where you need a real person on the other end of the phone, or just the simple fact that when you walk in the door, your banker knows your name, Bank of the Bluegrass has you covered. Plain and simple, the best bank in town. Bank of the Bluegrass, member FDIC. NMLS 421548, Equal Housing Lender.
DevelopLex is sponsored by SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate, a full-service commercial real estate firm located in Lexington, Kentucky, affiliated with the SVN International Network, which is comprised of over 1,600 advisors and staff and 200-plus offices across the globe. The SVN Stone team consists of experienced commercial real estate advisors in the heart of the Bluegrass. SVN provides commercial real estate services to large corporations, middle market businesses, and individual entrepreneurial investors. Serving the greater Lexington area, SVN offers advisory services for sales, leasing, management, and development of commercial properties locally, regionally, and nationally. With transaction volume of over $400 million, the advisors at SVN Stone Commercial Real Estate have vast experience and deep understanding of all aspects of commercial real estate.
So, urban service boundary, the committee of the whole has been meeting, probably going on a year, maybe even more than that now, trying to come up with the goals and objectives that's going to go into the comprehensive plan. Comprehensive plan is a plan that is put out by the city to say, this is how we want to be known. This is how we're going to grow. This is how we're going to proceed up until the next one. So, there have been some really cool thoughts that have come out of this. But really, in conclusion, everybody wants to talk about the urban service boundary, which is only one component of the comprehensive plan. And there's going to be an expansion of 2,700 acres up to 5,000 acres with a bunch of asterisks on it. So it is a great committee hearing to go back to June 1st. Check that out. It was fascinating. It was 4 hours, but I promise you that's better than some of the Netflix I've watched recently. so I think there's some things that people misunderstand about it. And here's my take on it. Weston, jump in and tell me that I'm stupid if you want. But the line is not our issue. We have way bigger problems than an imaginary line that tells you where you can build and where you can't build. Obviously, when you have more supply, things make it easier, but the amount of supply that we'll add is not going to make any of our lives noticeably different. We have an economics issue where we have got to have a stronger economy that has better wages, Better wages equal more disposable income. More disposable income is attractive to developers from out of town, but is also attractive to people that already have rents here because you know you can afford that rent. You know people aren't going to challenge you the second that there's a $100 rent increase in residential or a dollar foot increase in commercial. When you have a stronger economy, you have more people that are comfortable and you have less of these tense conversations that we've been having as a city. So I think we need to go upstream. The line is not our enemy. The line is honestly a distractor in this whole thing. We need to have economic development and we need to be just aggressive. We need to be ferocious about finding businesses that want to call Lexington home for all the sectors, for industrial, manual labor, all the way up to knowledge workers.
So let's back up just a little bit on that. Regarding the Lyme, let's explain to people that aren't as in tune with what exactly the Lyme is, how our city works mm-hmm. with the urban service boundary. Break down the urban service boundary.
Yeah, so urban service boundary, go back and listen to two different episodes. We had Raquel Carter, and then we also had Brittany Rothmeyer. Those are not two different opinions, or they are two different opinions. They are not opposites. They're achieving the exact same. They're trying to achieve the exact same thing, which is community success. But both of them have very informational topics about our urban services boundary. One of the things that the urban services boundary does is limits where you can subdivide land, where there's going to be city support, such as sewerability. Sewerability, some developers have to build out anyway. There's also going to be impact fees for that. But that is one of the things that's just way harder to get out there than possible. So it is where rural and urban meet.
So the city essentially has said, hey, anything, and in our case, we oftentimes it gets talked about that horse farms are the things that are outside of the urban service boundary. But really what it is the city is saying, hey, we're really not focused on subdividing, developing, bringing utilities to site, all of those things. Like, we're not focused on anything outside of the urban service boundary. And that is a line effectively that tells us where exactly that is happening. Correct.
And go check it out. It's a really a cool line, and tell me it does not look like Scooby-Doo. Have you ever seen that? Have I told you that before?
No.
Oh, go check it out. Up until there's the expansion, you will not unsee it now. I promise.
Yeah, so my opinion on it, and I don't have a strong opinion. I'm very much a person, if it hasn't been portrayed on this show, that if I don't know very much about something, I really don't want to state my opinion. And so this is one of the cases that Ross is much more of a developer, has worked for developers than I. We do, retail development, and we help people develop sites, but we are not in the nitty gritty of site development. That's just not, I'm more of a real estate broker. So with that said, what I do know is that Ross is more educated for our purposes on the urban service boundary, and then as well in the development process. With that said, my understanding of the development climate in Lexington is that we are not necessarily pro-develop. Like, it's just hard for outside of Lexington groups to come into Lexington and develop shopping centers, housing, whatever it might be. We don't have an economic developer-friendly climate for those people to come in, regardless of if we just said, screw the line, the line's gone. We still don't have an economy that's very developer friendly, is mm-hmm. my understanding, yeah, correct?
And I think it's not just the economy. I believe that most arguments need to be looked at with economic, social, and political, because that's what our planning commission is supposed to be evaluating. That's what our council is supposed to be evaluating. But when a student housing developer wants to create a dense R3 style apartment up on Maxwell and Lexington that's going to serve University of Kentucky students, but neighbors show up and say they don't want to live next to a wall,
mm-hmm.
And we can't look and say, but our comprehensive plan says this is exactly mm-hmm. what we need. That's where social disqualifies the economic and the political.
Yeah.
It's when, and they had such a bad experience, that developer will not look at Lexington again. It's when I'm talking with people in other cities and I mention Lexington, and instantly there's the shoulder blades tightening, and there's this cringe that they hear it and say, cool, college town, hard to develop.
Yeah.
They don't want to develop here. And that's a sad thing that we haven't had that interest for a long time. So there isn't this thirst for it anymore. We've mm-hmm. accepted complacency as the city to say, okay, well, look, we have the 1.5 developers of industrial, we have the 1.5 developers of downtown, we have the 1.5 developers of retail, and those are exaggerations.
Yeah.
But it's a stereotype that we have accepted as a city. We have to have champions that say, we're going to grow, we're going to be a powerhouse in Kentucky. Screw Louisville. Make this about beating them out.
So, that's a better way to say it. Not necessarily that our economics don't support it, because we all know that, like, we're an economic for the size of town that we are, and especially the things that support Lexington, such as healthcare and the university, like, very strong economic town. You know, median household income very high. Like, probably for developers, I would think that most people see our demographics and are like, yeah, I would love to be there, but they're just not super friendly to me building a shopping center there. Is that accurate?
It's when Blackstone calls and wants industrial distribution inside Lexington, because the Lexington address is valuable. Mm-hmm. Wall Street recognized, and you've heard me say it before, form follows finance. When the financiers, some of the New York institutionals, they want to be in Lexington. They don't want to be in Richmond. They don't want to be in Mercer County. They want to say they have a trophy property in Lexington. And they don't have that opportunity. So that might be where expanding the line is mm-hmm. is helpful, to be able to say, yeah, we're going to give you a Lexington Fayette County address. We're going to give you a 4050 insert number here. But I'm interested to hear this in 10 years and look back and see where we're at.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, overall, I went to the first meeting. I didn't go to the second, which happened last night, correct?
Last night was the adoption by the council.
Gotcha, adoption by the council. So I went to the first one, and the first one didn't have public opinion in it, so I don't know if it was like a... I have no idea what the second one was like, if there was a ton of outside opposition or whatever. But I would say overall, most of the people that I've talked to in the commercial real estate industry in the last couple of days that actually do understand what's going on, at least have some sort of sentiment of positivity or hope that we're at least looking forward and thinking, what can the city of Lexington be in the next 10 years? Is that...
Yeah, and that's such a healthy, creative mindset shift. Right now, we don't know where that expansion is going to be. But by giving somebody hope that then triggers a creativity, we get to create a better town. That whether it's on the peripherals or something in the core, it's going to be better just because there's a little bit more hope and creativity because of this. So we have adopted as a council. We have planning going through let me rant for just a second, Weston. We are overworking our planning and zoning guys so much that when they're having to answer to the council how long something's going to take,
yeah,
they're like, you know, maybe 3 years. And I was like, y'all, if this is a priority, let's go hire a Ernst & Young, a PwC, a McKinsey, something like that. Pair them with a Perkins of Will, a CRTKL, an architectural and land use planning group, and find ways to marry them together and say, hey, we have a lot of ideas. Help us figure out what other cities have done, find where those pitfalls are, and we'll hire you. It's the exact same notion that we're using to evaluate how the government center, the 200 block of Main Street, we hired EY to come in and do some space planning for us. To say, hey, we don't have the skill here. They hired a Louisville architect. They have a team out of Washington, D.C. and other places. And they said, we are going to give you all an option so that you can look at your real estate portfolio and say, are we going to build a new government center? Are we going to adopt or adapt this one or what? So, y'all, if we're going to make a priority of this plan, we have got to find a way to put some money behind it in the budget and either hire more planners to be LFUCG staffers or hire some contractors. We can't just keep waiting years for this thing to be done.
Very well said. And I would say overarching takeaway from me too, I just care that people care. Mm-hmm. Like that's another really neat, I mean, that's really one of the things that we're trying to achieve through having Develop Lex is just to get more people that care about our city. So I think just having more people that care about the growth of their city and the trajectory that we're on, that's a massive takeaway for me. So, no matter what how this decision ends up playing out, I'm really glad that there are people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever, that actually care, that are kind of on the forefront of this.
And last point on urban service boundary is this is all a symptom of regionalism. We have Lexington's population, 320,000, which actually just saw a 2% decrease for the first time in a long time. But we have an MSA that's continually to grow. We do not need to reinvent the regionalism wheel. Regionalism is something that Dallas and Fort Worth have struggled with. It's something that Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky have struggled with. It's something that Atlanta and Buckhead have struggled with, all for different reasons. Dallas and Fort Worth, two strong municipalities, two strong tax districts with a lot of clustering towns all around it. You have Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, two different states, two different taxes and tax levels between the states. There's certain places in Kentucky that people live on the Tennessee side or the Kentucky side for tax reasons. And Atlanta and Buckhead, a unincorporated and a city area. So one of the things we are lucky about in Lexington is having a merged government, which is Lexington-Fayette. But with that, we also have to think about how more than half of our population that works in Lexington does not live in Lexington. So as we make decisions with our council people, we have to think about, is this for our residents? Am I representing the residents or am I representing the coworker or our coworkers? And that's something that has been a struggle for everybody to think about, because those are two different demographic groups that you have to represent. They're not synonymous. Craftsman Contractors is Central Kentucky's one-stop shop for roofing, windows, siding, and gutters. CraftsmanContractors.com/contact us will get you straight to the form you need so that their team will get in touch about your project. Or just text Steven at 859-246-0108. When they finish your project of windows, siding, gutters, or roofing, you'll see what they mean when they say, "We build with integrity." Are you looking to start or scale your real estate portfolio in Central Kentucky? Check out Rapid Fire Investments. They find off-market, discounted real estate deals just for you, so you can save time and maximize profits. From single-family homes to multifamily apartments, no matter what your investment goals are, Rapid Fire can help you reach them. Sign up for their email list today and get notified when new properties become available. Just go to rapidfireinvestments.com. That's rapidfireinvestments.com. Weston, are you an Airbnb or a hotel guy?
Me and my wife just went to Black Mountain, North Carolina, and I stayed at an Airbnb, and I had a fantastic experience. It was a fantastic experience. I will say before that, though, I was a big hotel guy. Okay. But because, as you know, when I travel, I stay in select hotels, not anything bougie. I'm just a huge rewards guy, and they kind of sucked me in that way. But I'm also a huge free breakfast guy, even though you're paying for it because you're paying $180 a night. So long answer to the...
Weston's over here putting bananas in his pockets, walking out with apples in his backpack. That Hampton Inn is going to be...
Yeah, I'm a huge Hampton Inn guy. Free breakfast. Ross knows we stayed... I went to a retail conference in Atlanta last year, And yeah, I'm a huge Hampton Inn guy. Free breakfast. So
did I sleepwalk that time?
We can
talk about that offline.
You did.
So why we're bringing this up, short-term rentals really is what the government name of Airbnb, VRBO, home sharing is. It is the thing that cities are starting to look at right now. And that's, it could be that we're on a bandwagon, just like everybody, other city trying to regulate it. I do believe that there's neighbors that are feeling new things in their neighborhoods that they weren't before. And that sort of change is different. So short-term rentals has a policy that's just gotten out of committee. It's about to go back to council. It's gone through planning commission. Now that's headed to council. There is a ZODA. It's a zoning ordinance text amendment. And then there's also an ordinance. Those are things that are going to, in short, make the resident or the host have a license to operate. There could be certain conditional use permits that have to be there if you're going to have a whole house Airbnb, short-term rental. There's also things that if it's going to be over a certain size, you can't do it, or you have to get a conditional use permit. But I'm finding some interesting things that we just were bragging as a city that we made one of the lists for Airbnb, saying that we are a preferred destination. But we're also about to create regulation. Regulation usually means limitation and lowers the stock that's going to be available. So I don't know. Do you feel the...
I do not own an Airbnb, so I don't know exactly what goes into it. I will say that, yeah, what I don't understand quite with this point is the way that I feel like it's been branded to me, and educate me if I'm mistaken, is essentially, yes, they're going to regulate and maybe qualify people for Airbnbs a little bit more, which that inherently doesn't sound bad. I guess it depends on what the qualifications are. Is that accurate to say?
Yeah, they're not bad. It's just very difficult. And it also allows, we talk about NIMBYs and YIMBYs, mm-hmm. It allows your one neighbor named Barbara that has a privacy fence to say, we're not going to let that happen in this neighborhood. Go back to wherever your other zip code was.
Yeah.
So
that was also not a shot at my mom, whose name is Barbara.
Sorry.
Ross had no idea that my mom's name is Barbara. She is like the sweetest lady.
Does she have a privacy fence?
No privacy fence. We do have a fence, but that one's, it's just a normal fence. Yeah. And I guess, I guess without knowing a ton more, I would say that it doesn't sound inherently bad to have more regulation. It depends on how regulated that's going to be. So it is kind of scary to have governmental, I guess would be the way to say it, authority over how you conduct a private business. But you know, if it eliminates people having horrible Airbnb experiences in Lexington, you know, I guess it's not all bad.
Yeah.
But I don't know enough to speak on the actual in and out of running an Airbnb. So hopefully it doesn't make people's jobs a lot harder.
Yeah. Weston, Jerome Powell.
he paused him.
I saw that.
Yeah. So this is the topic that I feel like I know a lot about, and that's interest rates. What's funny about that is nobody's a fortune teller, so I don't think anybody knows a lot about interest rates. But I at least know from the people that are listening to this show that are buying real estate, how that's affecting them. I just bought a house last
week.
Thank you. Me and my wife are moving over to the Southland Drive area, and our rate was 6.5%. And every time I tell somebody that, and they bought a house a year and a half ago, they just hold their breath, and they don't know how to finish the conversation. I'm like, okay, what? you have a 3.25? I know. Everybody else does too. I will say that didn't for a second not make me and my wife buy a house. Now, if it was 11%, would it have changed the purchase price of that house and what we could have afforded, yeah, for sure. But I will say that 6.5%, everybody, including Tom Greenkey, who was on the show, especially anybody that's over 40, will tell you, hey, 6.5%, everybody has their own story, especially if they're over 40, of, hey, my first house was at 11 or whatever. It's still a little bit of a shock to somebody that, you know, I've been in real estate for 5 years now. And since I've been in real estate, interest rates haven't been this high. So it is a bit of a shock. But I don't think it's slowing down transaction volume for residential to the extent that, you know, maybe we thought it would have. Things are still flying off the shelves in Lexington. If something is priced appropriately, especially if it's under 400, I would say maybe under 300, it's like a bloodbath, but under 400, it's still flying off the shelves. Commercial, I'll say a lot of my deals have been getting a lot harder to do. So as we sit here right now, I would say that most lenders I'm talking to in mid-June are somewhere in the, depending on your credit with the bank, but somewhere in the 6.5% to 8% interest rates. That's most of the time what they're quoting. You can get a 30-year fixed in residential, and you can get a 5 to 10 year fixed. Most of the time, a 5 year fixed on a 20 to 25 year AM in commercial. So that changes, you know, when we're talking about cap rates. Cap rates have still not caught up to interest rates. That's just a plain reality. So my deal volume in commercial has slowed down significantly on cap rate sales. What hasn't changed, though, or actually what's gotten better, is my leasing has gone up tremendously. And my thought process behind that is that there are so many companies that are still doing, like, consumers, American consumers just still have a lot of jingle in their pocket. And I don't think that us raising, interest rates 300 basis points in the last 400 basis points in the last however many months has changed the average American consumer's day to day. I just don't think it has. I need to look at the GDP, and I need to understand a little bit more on the macro of that. But I think day to day in the city of Lexington, this interest rate environment has not changed a ton of people's day to day. That's just my thought on it. And in the commercial real estate world, leasing is gangbusters right now. I would say, like, I'm still very, very busy, and sales are still happening for sure. It's just the sales that happened 2 years ago when somebody was, or a year ago when somebody was buying a 4 cap and they had a 2.5% or a 3% interest rate. So they only got 150 basis point spread. That's just not happening anymore. People can't, stuff that's being priced inaccurately, like it should have been 2 years ago. It's just not, it's sitting. We, for the last 2 years in commercial, we haven't seen stuff sit, and things are sitting on the market for a very long time. But it also is just making real estate brokers do their job, is kind of my thought on it. Like, you can't just throw a 5 cap on it and let the panic ensue. You actually have to price something according to interest rates and according to the environment that's happening right now. So, little rant on interest rates, but that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah. I think something else to point out in the interest rate conversation is product type. I'm seeing a big distaste for office right now. I have a master planned community in Texas, has a beautiful esplanade provided by the city. The city is completely supported. Carrollton, Texas is an incredible city that understands economic development. Dallas-Fort Worth area, multifamily, equity and debt came easy. Office, that's a little bit harder right now.
Yeah.
And so to go into interest rates, there are some asterisks I'd put on your statement to say also product type makes a difference.
For sure.
And you saw it when everybody was hating on retail back in 2020, 2021. That's just, there's always going to be a product type that people love to throw shade at.
For sure. Office is that right now.
Office is that.
Yeah. 100%.
I have no predictions of what the next one is, but my gosh,
Yeah, good asterisk to throw. I would say 80% of what I do right now is retail. I probably do 10 to 15 of office, and I wish I did more industrial, because if you list something for lease industrial in Lexington, it's going to lease immediately. And I think that's a lot of places. Industrial is just the winner of the last few years. And there's a lot of things that go into that. I'll also I'll asterisk my own statement and say that it depends on the bank as to, obviously that goes without saying, as to what interest rate you're getting. Some banks are being more aggressive in general, like they're just more willing to do loans. I've talked to several banks that liquidity is a big deal. If a bank has more liquidity, and right now that often means bigger banks. So, insert big bank here. I don't need to go through the list, but bigger banks are not winning. Winning's not the right way to say it, but bigger banks are getting a lot of deal volume because they have more liquidity than your local or your regional. With that said, there are local and regional banks that have played these last few years very well, and they have a ton of liquidity, and they're doing, like, you know, just a bank that you wouldn't expect is doing a ton of deal volume right now because they actually have the liquidity to do so. Mm-hmm. So to qualify my statement on that as well, bank by bank basis, but yeah, there are definitely some banks that are still doing good deal volume because they've played their last few years right.
Yeah. Last topic, affordable housing. Think you can wrap up how to solve the world's problems in 3 minutes?
No, but you can try to start.
So I knew nothing about affordable housing this time last year. Started working with a group that one of the principles that we, or one of the principal product types that we do, is mixed income housing that includes affordable. And my gosh, affordable housing is so misunderstood. Like, it is
capital A affordable housing,
low income housing tax credit, things where there's some sort of government injection into making it affordable, where the tenant has to qualify is what I'm thinking of. And we just saw a statement come out from the mayor's office in Lexington saying that affordable housing should be a part of the urban service boundary growth area. And I just think that's ridiculous. Not because I'm against affordable housing, but that is so misaligned with what we really need to be doing. We need to be around transportation-oriented routes. Going to the peripherals is a gesture towards the drive till you qualify, or it's putting people out somewhere that you're going to have one bus come every 45 minutes, and that's it. I would say, before dictating what should go out in the urban service boundary expansion area that isn't owned by the city, let's take one of the city golf courses and convert it into a master plan community, sponsor it, layer some the HUD's CNI, the Choice Neighborhood Initiative, with the transportation department's transit-oriented development, pre-development funds, and build one awesome master planned mixed income community. Test it out first and show that one of these not profitable or low profitable golf courses could be turned into a highly profitable asset for the housing authority. I think we got to put our money where our mouth is first before we start dictating what needs to go out in the expansion area.
I love a good Ross hot take.
Who can I debate on this? Is that?
I love it.
Can we get a spot on WKYT for that?
I just got a Play Golf range membership because I'm just trying to get better at golf. I'm so bad at golf, and I'm just trying to get better. So my prayer is that you won't do it at Kearney. If you were given the opportunity, you wouldn't do it at Kearney or Lakeside, because those are the only two places that I go. But you can have any of the other ones. I don't care. They're probably too hard for me anyway. I thought that actually brings me, your thought process behind that brings me to, something that's really neat that is at the, Calgill property on the corner of Winchester Road and Polo Club Boulevard. Mm-hmm. Is that they have, percentages dictated behind the zoning that's behind this property. And I was thinking that does seem like a really appropriate, I didn't say it during our section for urban service boundary, but is that a viable option to do beyond the urban service boundary to have a breakdown of percentages? I know that we'll zone everything appropriately, B3, B2, whatever that qualifies things, but is that type of zoning conducive to what we're trying to achieve in the city of Lexington? I'm just curious.
I think it depends on the developer. If you're a developer that is just a fee-based developer, you're going to transact out after stabilization in 3 to 5 years once you get through construction. Depending on how stringent those ratios are, you could be handing a hot potato to the next guy that might not have the exact same. They might love it while that's stabilized, but as soon as retail goes through the next crash,
yep,
and you're trying to figure out how to shift from what was a beautiful live, work, play, or if going back to the social, political, economic, if socially that neighborhood goes awry and nobody wants to have a retail spot there, but you're bound by zone to do that, you're going to have some cold, dark shells.
Yeah.
Again, so I'm not, and zoning is something that I hope people aren't scared to ask for changes in. And I hope people aren't scared to support those or aren't scared to speak up and say no. I don't think that's best for the neighborhood.
So
it would be more dangerous if you, what is it? When you put on the title or when you put on the deed, and you cannot change it after that, we put a deed restriction.
Like
on
goes
there.
Into perpetuity with
yeah,
a deed restriction.
Yeah, that would be
a
draconian.
Something else we didn't talk about during the urban service boundary talk was I think a disclaimer for everything urban service boundary related is that even if we do open up the urban, where I mean I'm jumping back, but I just remembered that we forgot to talk about it. Even if we do open up the urban service boundary, even if we open the gates wide open, those pieces of land that are currently zoned ag still have to go through the appropriate zoning process to
before,
get rezoned correct.
Correct. And they have to even have an agreed upon, like if you added in something that somebody's never going to sell, that you didn't add anything there.
Mm-hmm.
There's a horse farm in town that was part of the urban service boundary as it exists right now that will not ever sell. But if you do want to sell, hit up Weston. He probably has some people in his back pocket that will buy it.
I might.
They're all privately owned right now. They're owned by people that have to go through a sale. There have to be people that need zoning. And that's part of the comprehensive plan. Going back to, it's not just the line, it's the plan.
Mm-hmm.
You can say, hey, I need this zone change. And this is why it aligns with comp plan X. And you outline that. So that's supposed to be one of the guides through the zoning process.
And so there are, I think that is one of my biggest takeaways from this whole process and seeing it kind of unfold is that we do have to be strategic, and nobody is saying that we don't as it relates to urban service boundary and the way that we develop Lexington in a strategic way. But there are still appropriate checks and balances. We're just trying to make sure that we're not putting way too many checks before anybody can do anything to where we can't get anything done.
Yeah. The analysis paralysis is a real thing. At some point, somebody has to step up, be the champion, make a decision, and say, this is what we're going to do, and you all need to trust me. That's the power of being a strong political leader, civic leader. It doesn't even have to be an elected position. It can be somebody that's widely admired. And that's something that Lexington's missed in the past is our corporations. If I had to ask most of Lexington who the CEO of Valvoline or Tempur Sealy is, they wouldn't be able to tell you. But the second you go down to Atlanta and ask who the CEO of Home Depot is, everybody knows. It's because there's civic involvement and there's civic influence there.
Okay, wrapping it up, we talked about some topics that people had suggested us to talk about. I would say that we'll continue to do this format for into perpetuity for DevelopX. With that said, it'll only be every, you know, several months, and we would love to hear more topics that are interesting to people. We might not be educated on the topic, but we'll at least talk to somebody that is. With that said, again, none of the things that we said reflect anything that either of our employers or whoever has told us to say. It's just us being in the environment and maybe making opinions about that. To add to that, the fact that, again, we have people in our environment of Lexington that actually care enough to talk about topics that are approaching us and wanting to talk about urban service boundary, Airbnb, interest rates, all those things is like blowing my mind because there are actually people that really care about the city. And that, I think that's the sign of a healthy city, if you ask me, is just people that are really invested in their community. So I would say we don't know everything on these topics at all. I especially don't, and would love to get approached and talked to about any of these. So hit my line on that.
Yeah, join us at the next happy hour. Be watching our social medias. We're going to have more in-person events so that you can meet the other listeners that are just as engaged as you are. We believe that there's a bunch of ways that you can involve yourselves with the community. We hope DevelopX is part of it. Follow us on all the podcast platforms. Follow us on social media. Subscribe to the newsletter. There is a lot of gold in all of those. And we look forward to seeing you all and talk to you all soon.
Peace.
DevelopX is a part of the Middletech family of brands. This episode is edited by Jacob Spencer. Emily McCarthy creates our social content that serves you daily.